Let me start with the quantum metrics. So the original idea comes from Kerr. So if you take a compact, say connected manifold, then you have this spectral triple with smooth function, graph of Kerr, and Hilbert space of spinners. Then Kerr noticed that one can recover the metric on this manifold, metric of course that's the geodesic distance, from the spectral triple here. The formula is well known now, so you just take take 2 points here, then the distance is recovered as supreme of f of x minus f of y, where f is a smooth function, and you require to come through with the draw coupler as normal at most one. Now, he also mentioned that general, even when A is non-commutative, if you still have a spectral triple, then one can use the star to get something similar, but of course in non-commutative case you don't have points anymore, so what you do is to get metric the state space of A, okay, in general. I put a quotation mark here because if you don't assume anything, some other conditions, what you get here could be quite strange. For example, if they all commute, F commutes with B, then actually here you see that this is 1 with 0, then you get everything, you can take F to be everything in your system at first could be infinity. Okay, so you have to put some reasonable assumption there in order to get something really being a metric. Then Ripple noticed that in the process here, what matters is not, what really matters is not the spectral triple, it's just this thing here. Okay? So in the reconstruction from the picture here, from dual coupler back to metric, notice that actually it factors through with something that is this commutator here. In a commutative case, this, if you really start with a compact spin manifold, then this is actually the Lipschitz seminal on the smooth function. Okay? So the point here is that you really start with D to recover the Lipschitz seminal, then from the seminal, you recover the metric. Then, of course, in general, there's It's not necessary to start with D, you can just start with some seminal. You can just try to do this step. The point is that there are a lot of seminoms which do not come from D. Okay. So let's mention the definition. Ripple. Say a compact quantum metric space is a unit Swiss algebra A a seminom L on A which is partially infinite values. If you want to define, if you're in the conversion case, if you look like the Lipschitz seminom, it's finite if and only if your function is Lipschitz. Okay? So if you extend it to the whole algebra, it's possibly infinite, but finite on a dense subspace. In general, you can say just the subspace. Oh, sorry, this N here. But practically, in good situation, you actually get subalgebra. For example, if it really comes from the alpha operator, it's actually on a subalgebra. That's a I've not finished the written down it here. Okay, let me write down first. Then I will see what happens to the Lipschitz condition. So this should kill the constant function. Okay, the constant function definitely has Lipschitz seminom zero, and the self adjoint. And the most important thing, as I mentioned, the idea is that you usually have a metric on the state space. So this is a star formula. If I this is really a metric on the state space of A compatible with the Weierstrass topology. So that's the definition, and actually this definition is defined more generally for so-called ordering spaces, okay, but we're just, let's talk, the example we're going to talk about here, quantum non-commutative Heisenberg manifold will actually be a Swiss algebra, and in general, that's actually the main interest. So we'll just stick to the Swiss algebra here. So for about the Leibniz rule, if the seminom comes from a dual operator, or comes from some just derivations, as in our example we'll see, then it will satisfy the Leibniz rule. But the point is that in the general theory works without assuming the Leibniz rule. But in some, if you assume the Leibniz rule, it does provide some advantage for specific questions. For example, when you try to talk about the Gromov cost of distance, when you try to talk about the complete list there, then when you assume the Leibniz rule, then you get something out. And also, recent years, people have been trying to see what happens for vector bundles in that situation. It's also better to assume Leibniz rule there. Okay.
So if A is constant, do you really get compact network.
If A is community, if
I take the gap from that.
Yes, then you, this already tells you that you do get the metric.
So in this general definition, do you allow, I mean, is it somehow implied that your C class or A is technically separable?
Yes, it does imply that it has a metric, yes. Okay. Let's see some examples. So the first one is the Con-90 as a spectral set of definition. So you will start with a commutative case, compact spin manifold. But you assume that it has an action of the n-dimensional torus. So that's called alpha. The action is assumed to preserve all the structure. Okay. In general, you can assume that it preserves just the Riemann metric, but then you can find some cover lifting up to preserve even the spin structure. Okay. And you have the spectral shape as before. Then this action also preserves the, it acts on the Hilbert space, acts and the action will commute with the Dirac group here. Okay. Now, as what you do for Lancome torus, you take a symmetric matrix. Then one can just paste the multiplication on the smooth functions. Using alpha, using the action there, and a symmetric matrix. Okay. Basically just decompose it into spectral subspaces, and you think of each spectral subspace just like the unitary for Lancome torus, and when you multiply them, you use the entries here to get some coefficients. So then here we get a new algebra. Let's call it, well, you can do it at a smooth algebra level, or you can do it at a continuous algebra level, both are fine. Okay. Get the unit algebra. Let's think of it as continuous functions of some deformed manifold, of course, which really does not, the manifold does not really exist. The algebra is not merging. No, it's not. This is actually, if you want to ask how it's precisely defined, it's defined as principal arc of this one with Lancome torus. And torus acts on this one, acts on Lancome torus, it has the product action, and it takes the fixed point subalgebra. Okay, so if you, let me just say that, if you start with if you start with M to be torus itself, acting just on itself, then this new algebra will be just a Lancome torus. As I said, for this algebra, you keep the isospectral, that means you keep H and keep D, just changing the multiplication there. And for this one, if you define the same norm, just to be the commutator norm here, then this does define a quantum magic. On this quantum space. As another example, which is much more difficult, is you take gamma discrete, the finitely generated group, and you take the Euler gamma, so it takes the finitely generated, take the Euler. Then you can look at the reduced group set algebra, and the D and R2 of gamma. Where D is just a multiplication by, by the length function. So at each point, at each group point, you multiply the coordinate by the length function. So you can consider this symmetrical. This is actually the original case considered when we try to define a symmetric on the length space. Which one? This one? That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know actually.
Well,
I guess Mark is in, we'll talk about generic, you want to fix the action first. Then you're talking about generic for theta to be changing. Mark is saying if the action is not so nice.
Okay, but I suppose,
did you say
that if
you reduce
the
non-clear
the torus, I mean if suppose if M is
the
torus, then you would just take the translation,
yes, but it has a single orbit.
Right.
But yes, for that case, you get on just one single orbit.
That could be a definition of
generic. I mean, generic, or what? There are two parameters. One is the action, one is the theta. When we talk about genericity, you want to see which one is changing.
What is the other parameter
about? The original one that works out is the torus action on four-dimensional sphere. Dimensional torus. Specifically, when you look at the isometric group with the Lie group, and you look at the maximum torus.
Yeah, this theta is not
perfect. So this one is quite difficult. So far, the case is known that we figured out that this does define quantum metric for the case just gamma is the Abelian group, and the unit, the Abelian group, and the. Yes, extremely difficult. Well, that one, different than what I showed you for hyperbolic. Group looks very simple, but the proof is very difficult. So this is the opening in general. The whether this in this case whether you get the quantum metric or not.
three on the right foot. That's
yeah, that's the new one. Now let's get some get to some example more close to what we're trying to talk about. So now you take a knee group. And so we take an action, a G action, strongly continuous, but that's usually assumed, G action on a unit of 6 diaper. A. Then you have the smooth elements. This is algebra. So that means that when you look at the map from G to A, the orbit map sending G to alpha G of A, this is smooth. So you look at the vortex, the elements. We know that this is smooth algebra. Okay. Now you fix a norm on the new algebra of G. This is another way to just take as a monometric G. Okay, just take, you fix some inner product, or in general, just a norm on the algebra, and you transfer it to every point in the Lepman multiplication. Okay. Excuse me. Now we would like to transfer, so we'd like to transfer the metric. On G to A. Okay. So one way to do that is simply just to say you define a semi-norm just as a supreme of alpha x A. What is alpha x A there? So A is supposed to be in a smooth algebra, and x is in the Lie algebra. So you take x to have norm at most of 1. So this is what this just means, the derivation. Okay, alpha is acting on A, and we're taking an element in the smooth algebra. So when you take one element in the algebra, you can take a derivative there and you get it. So that's what we're writing there. Okay, just look at the derivative, look at this norm. Okay. Or you can just equivalently, you can just pick up or a basis, fix the basis in the algebra, and you do this for this finitely many elements in your basis, taking the maximum. For this really to work, you notice that if A is fixed by the action, okay, then this definitely is going to be zero. Okay, but we didn't stay here, but from the axiom, we assume that R is going to be zero on the identity element, but if we figure out what really happens from the axiom's definition, and you will see that if you really get the metric on the state space coinciding with the weak star topology, then actually the semi-norm can only kill the scalars. So if some element vanishes on the semi-norm, then it has to be a scalar. So that means actually we had, in order for this to get the quantum metric, we have to assume that it's ergodic. So we need to assume. That the action is ergodic. That just means simply the fixed point subalgebra consists of exactly the scalars. So what does this mean the commutative case, when G is compact and A is commutative, actually this tells us, for this it tells us that A is actually a continuous function on some homogeneous space. So in general, especially when G is compact, you should think that A is some kind of non-commutative homogeneous space. Especially when G equals, but on the other hand, in the non-commutative case, if you take G to be the torus, then basically A has to be a non-commutative torus, essentially. Okay. Up to some non-degeneracy condition, yeah, so that this is the only choice. Now, it showed that when G is compact, the formula here, L, does define a quantum metric. On the sixth algebra in general. Then, now the question is, what happens if G is not compact? It's just locally compact there. You know. No, we're not assuming. We're starting with just one ergodic action of the new group, compact new group on a unit system algebra, and you define the same norm this way. So if the theorem says that the same norm defines the quantum metric, in other words, the conditions that were done earlier are satisfied, especially the last one, that's the main one.
Sorry, I didn't know.
Now the question is, what happens if G is not compact? Okay. Our main result is yes, we get to the action of the three-dimensional Hausdorff group. it works. But it's doing the group is when the action is the Heisenberg group acting on the non-commutative Heisenberg manifold. I need to tell you what is the Heisenberg group and what is the Heisenberg manifold. Actually, we have seen the Heisenberg group earlier this week. But let me just write it down. So it has a group. And for the three dimensional one, it's just 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0. X, Y, Z. Well, X, Y, Z are just three numbers. Then what is the non-commutative Heisenberg manifold? Or maybe you want to ask what is the Heisenberg manifold from the beginning? So if X a positive integer, say you look at this subgroup DC, subgroup 1, 1, 1, well, let's just steal those matrices, but it just allow x, y, and c times z are integers. Okay, this is subgroup. The point is that if you look at the quotient, this is a compact manifold. Heisenberg manifold. What is the Heisenberg manifold? It turns out that the Heisenberg manifold was constructed for the purpose of deformation correlation in the stress diaper setting, the strict deformation correlation of power structure on the quantum Heisenberg manifold. So let me just say that G invariant, of course, GX on the Heisenberg manifold by just left the translation. G invariant partial structure on the Heisenberg manifold are parameterized by just the two parameter family. So and then the U and mu, you get some invariant G invariant structure there. I won't write down the formula, but because this is just originally where it comes from, okay? So then from this partial structure, you try to do some strict deformation condition. For this power structure, then you constructed this algebra. It's denoted by the parameters. The C is the integer structure which is defining the Heisenberg manifold, and this parameterized the power structure. H bar is the Planck constant, giving you the deformation correlation there. Okay. So H bar is also a zero number. Okay. So this is the algebra. Of course, when h bar equals 0, you get exactly the continuous functions on the Heisenberg manifold. Okay. So that's the non-commutative Heisenberg manifold. the point is that G still acts on it. G has a natural ergodic action. On this algebra. To give you some idea of how this is really defined, let me just write down some formula here so you can see how this moves, roughly what it looks like. But it is fairly complicated. So you start with defining the smooth functions, smooth algebra inside of the set algebra. So what you do is to look at the infinite functions from R, T, cos Z to C, such that it satisfies kind of a periodicity in this component here. So this is e to the 2 pi I J K P Y. If you interpret it as integer, So x. You interpret write y here is in the torus, you interpret it as a real number, so that this makes sense. Okay. And the second one is just that it has rapid decay. So that means for any polynomial on Z in the last component, and then the differential operator on these two, just by the ordinal ones, so EX and UN, R cos T, you require that after you take the derivative, you multiply it with the polynomial. Let's see P here. It's still bounded. So P this is bounded. And the click was Z when the compact K contained in R plus T. Then this algebra here, this is algebra, is the norm completion of this one. Under some norm. In fact, it's just basically you repeat. Well, I should say that this is just a space, and you define the multiplication. You twist the multiplication. The twisting is just still as normative torque is in this component. Okay. So it's kind of a convolution algebra. Okay. The function is supported at M here, times the function is supported at N, should give you a function supported at M plus N. Okay. If you just take the point-wise multiplication, that's just for the Heisenberg mind for the commercial case. Now, for the non-commercial case, for H bar not equal to zero, you do some twisting in this multiplication. But you still have function supported at N, times function supported at N, you still get the function supported at M plus N. But the multiplication is twisted. And, if you represent it on the actual space of R times T times Z, take a long closure there. you get it. You get the dispatcher. So how does the proof work? Let me just to say that the K here, I should mention it, maybe not, previous work. So, Nick Weaver, I think in 1998, showed that he pretty much studied the metric there, only for the subdomain metric. So basically, natural group there, the algebra is, this is three dimensional, so what the Dick Weaver did is only to look at these two guys. Okay, he's drawing the algebra in this component here. Okay. And Chakraborty. Did it in reference framework using all the components, the whole algebra, but he used some L1 norm instead of the sexta norm. Usually call that we define the semi norm here. We're taking the derivative of x of a and taking the sixth algebra norm. Okay. But in Chakraborty, he has to use the L1 norm. Some L1 norm there. L1 norm, well, just over the component the integers. Okay. You take a super norm on each piece, each support, and then you just add them together. Okay. That's, L1 norm is bigger, so it's easier to deal with. Okay. It's bigger. So this semi norm is definitely bigger than the semi norm defined in the sixth norm. Then it's easier to show that it defines the quantum metric. Let me say a few words on how the proof works out. How we can, what will make it possible for us to deal with this non-compact group in this case here. The key here is the following. So this is a non-compact group. It has some compact group hiding inside, but not really in the Heisenberg group. So what happens is that if you look at how GX, G acts on the just the Heisenberg manifold, because the non-compact case, the action on the non-compact Heisenberg manifold, definition of the action is pretty much similar. It's defined on the smooth algebra. So the formula is pretty much the same. So let's just look at this case. It shows how it works. So the point here is that when we look at this action, then you see that these ones for Z, let's put on here, an integer is actually just because this component is contained in the center, okay, and these elements are already inside of the subgroup itself. So the action has to be trivial when you stick to these elements. Okay. So in other words, if you call this the H, then the action factors through G modulo H. Okay. Once you modulo H, what happens is that you get the real number here, you get the real number here, but now this becomes a circle. This component just becomes a circle. Okay? So you get that the torus containing here. Get the circle containing here. Once you have the circle containing inside of it, then, well, this is especially simple in this case, it's really contained. But in general, if you have one action in general, if you have T action on the algebra commuting with G action or just take in general, you could take in the compact group there, compared with the GRPs. Then what happens is that pretty much, but you have to add some other matter conditions, then what happens is that the L defined there, the seminum defined here, using this this group action there, defines a quantum metric. If and only if, can show that this is a quantum metric. If and only if L restricted to each spectral space, a gamma, where gamma is in the dual, defines the metric, defines the quantum metric. So that's the main theorem which makes the proof work. So in this case, what happens is that once you use you decompose it into this spectral spaces, then in fact they are actually pretty much the same, even for the as just for the non-commutative, for the commutative case, for the original case h bar equals zero. Okay, so when you once you decompose into the spectral spaces, they're pretty much just the same as for the commutative case. You already know that in the commutative case, so you can just transfer it to the non-commutative case. When I say this L restricted the spectral space, this is clear if this character is a trivial one, zero, okay, the identity representation, a trivial representation, because in other cases it's a fixed point subalgebra, that's the assist algebra. But for other character, this is actually not a assist subalgebra. But what I mean here is that from the definition of quantum metric, you find some equivalent or some calculation of how you can proceed to prove it. Basically, what happens is that you look at certain subsets inside of your sister algebra. You define somehow the ball, each ball of the sister algebra intersected with the unit ball of the sister algebra under the sister norm, and the intersection with the unit ball under the semi-norm, you want it to be totally bounded. So you can reformulate the condition of defining quantum metric into totally bounded, is said to be totally bounded. Then, by that sense, I mean this defining quantum metric. So what I really mean is just that when you look at the intersection of the unit balls, it's totally bounded. That's what I mean. The last remark is just get probably 2 minutes here. So I just say that later. Landslide and driven. I think I got a lot of spin here. Extended this Lifford construction to a more general case to construct equivalent deformation of homogeneous spaces. Okay, so they need some other data. So basically, they start with local compact group. They have gamma inside of it. You want to define G modulo gamma, and what they start with is they need the compact Abelian group containing G, and they want to map from G into homomorphism from K into G, satisfy some condition. Okay, these are the data you start with. So this is the homogeneous space. And you start with this data, satisfying some condition, then they constructed some deformation there. Of course, here this is in general local compact, but if you assume it to be a new group, then I think that's everything you need. You assume it to be a new group, this one does not, even in their setting, this one does not have to be a compact. If you assume this to be a new group, you assume that this is compact, okay, then everything will work out here actually works in general, even in their setting. Okay, so. especially this contains some high dimensional generation of the Hertzberg manifolds. There are two different families, each of them generalize the three dimensional case. But I don't want to write them all out here. Also, I would like to say that there is also the notion of Gromov Hausdorff distance for quantum metric spaces. But one can actually also show that we see that for this quantum, not only for Hertzberg manifold, you get some parameter here, but you actually can show that if we also develop this quantum version of Gromov Hausdorff distance, you can show that this manifold quantum metric spaces also depend on these parameters continuously in the quantum Gromov Hausdorff distance. Alright, I will just stop here.
The structures are classified here? In this higher dimensional case, you mean
quantum structures are classified? Quantum structures? No, they didn't start with the quantum structure. They just started with this abstract data there.
Oh, the row.
Yeah. So the parameter, you can think that the parameter is just this row. Yeah. So this is not deformation, but not really deforming some Poisson structure. Not necessarily.
Maybe I can I think it's quite kept what the statement is for the
non
community
defined
manifold. So,
you mean how it's defined?
In the ordinary case, the ordinary Heisenberg manifold, seems to me you just said that you get a quantum metric there.
Yes.
Okay. But I didn't catch the actual statement from the non-communicative Heisenberg manifold. Are you saying exactly the same thing for the non-communicative Heisenberg manifold?
I'm saying that for the non-communicative Heisenberg manifold, you get the quantum metric, generally.
It is a quantum metric.
Yes.
And the left-hand board, is that another example, or is that related to the?
This is the key of the proof. Yeah, it's the key part. It's not.
Okay, well then I have a technical question.
What is the quantum metric on the algebra, but what goes on the spectral substrate? Yes, I just mean that if we try to check whether the semi-node defines a quantum metric or not. You can just check it on the algebra itself. You don't really need to look at the state space. Okay, it's difficult to deal with the state space. You can just look at the algebra itself. What you look at is basically just the unit ball of the algebra under the sixth alone intersect with the unit ball of the algebra under the semilone. You look at this unit ball, you show that it's totally bounded. Essentially, that's the condition. Yes, that's what I mean here. Yes.
Yes, of course. This generalizes.
K-height? You mean rho is from K-height then to G?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right, I guess. Yeah, you were right. That's a problem from K-height. Sorry. You change the product on A?
I mean, typically you have sort of
you change the product. So in this case, for example, in the quantum Heisenberg manifold case, you have a parameter mu, v, and h bar. You can change them continuously.
Yeah.
In this case, you can change the homomorphism rho here continuously. Okay, then yes, there is a quantum version of the Gormov Hausdorff distance. The original Gormov Hausdorff distance is defined between compact and metric spaces. One can define it for the macrometrical setting. Then when the parameter changes, this quantum metric spaces change continuously under this distance. Yes. Yes.
So did you say that I had one question actually? Yeah, for this